Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to the Ghibliotech, the podcast that picks through the parade of films from the world's greatest animation studio, Studio Ghibli. I'm Michael Leader, and I've seen the lot of them.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and I'm pouring my way through them too.
So join us in our quest into the glorious world of Ghibli. Oh, Jake, we're returning once more into the Ghibliotech.
Yes, it's good to be back. I mean, we don't want to give listeners a peek behind the curtain too much, but we have actually been away from our basement under the stairs for a few weeks. And it's lovely to be sat in front of you and sat with a guest as well.
Yes, exactly. Let's welcome Ayanna Murray to the episode.
Hello.
Welcome,
it's
Ayanna.
Good to be
Thank
here.
You for joining us. So just for the benefit of our audience, who are you?
Well, I'm Ayanna. I'm a freelance film writer based in Scotland mostly. And I write for a blog called Much Ado About Cinema, and I also write for The Skinny.
Mm-hmm. We're keeping a tradition going where we need a Scottish contributor
every
season.
Yes.
So you're following on from Robbie Collin. So you
can,
big shoes or tall shoes to fill.
Yeah, and as with Robbie, where we got into his origin story of Studio Ghibli, we'll do the same with you. but maybe best to reveal what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, so this is the first and only Ghibli sequel that we're talking about today. Kind of sequel, pseudo sequel.
Mm.
It's The Cat Returns.
Yeah.
Should we crack on with it, Jake?
Let's do it.
High school girl Haru's life takes an unexpected turn after one day saving a cat from being hit by a car. It turns out that the cat is actually a prince, and his father, the king of cats, wants to show Haru his gratitude by allowing her to marry the prince and become princess of the cat kingdom. Held against her will in the kingdom, Haru starts to develop feline features, but two heroes step in to assist her, the mammoth Mog Muta and the dashing Baron.
So, Michael, a few episodes ago, you teased me about a Porco Rosso sequel, The Last Sortie, and it never came about. And Porco Rosso is definitely one of my faves that we've covered here. And Whisper of the Heart, certainly one of my faves as well.
One of my faves.
And now we've got a sequel to it. And I need to know more about how this happened.
So this is, it seems that every episode I say that it's a funny production story. This one is probably the funniest. So let me take you back to 1999. A proposal comes to Studio Ghibli from a Japanese theme park, and they want a 20-minute short film all about cats.
So this is very already mirroring Porco Rosso.
Exactly, but instead of Japan Airlines, it's a theme park. Miyazaki hears, gets wind of this short film idea, and he comes in and says, "Hey, wouldn't this be a great opportunity to make a sequel to Whisper of the Heart?" And he says, "I want three aspects of Whisper of the Heart to be reflected in this short film. I want Muta, the big, massive cat that if you remember from Whisper of the Heart, terrorizing the dog sitting there on the fence. He wants the Baron to be in there, Baron von Gickingen, the statue that comes to life and goes on derring-do adventures. And he wants the antique shop location to come back. So he brings back Aoi Hiragi, the manga artist who created Whisper of the Heart, and asks her to write the sequel, The Cat Returns, with the idea for it to be made into a short story, almost within the universe of Whisper of the Heart. It's almost the short story that the main character from Whisper of the Heart would write herself.
yeah, the lead in this is not the lead of Whisper.
No, but the universe is, this is a fantasy world. Whisper the Heart was set in the real world with imagination, providing that flight of fantasy. Whereas here, this is a fantasy world almost as if imagined by the characters from Whisper the Heart. This is nice and convoluted, isn't it, Jake, for a 20-minute long short film. But anyway, the theme park project was shelved, and but it was still being kicked around at Ghibli for a few years. And that's where Hiroyuki Morita comes in, who was... He wasn't a Ghibli veteran, so to speak. He'd worked on My Neighbors, the Yamadas, the Yasao Takahata film that we may get to one day on this podcast.
We'll get there.
He'd been around making anime for years. He'd worked on Akira. I think that was his first credit. Imagine that being the first project you worked on. But he was working at Ghibli, and he came to the project. But in the process of planning, putting storyboards together, writing a script, this was too big to be a 20-minute short film. Again, maybe some jogging your memory with Porco Rosso there.
Yeah, for sure. And also the idea of the theme park getting involved, and that makes me think of Pompoko as well.
Interesting.
And how a theme park comes in as the big bad, in a way, in that film.
Both on and off screen.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then here, Miyazaki's all about get the theme park involved.
Yeah. But so Morita has this way ambitious idea for the film, way too big for 20 minutes. And Toshio Suzuki, the man behind Ghibli, as far as we're concerned, he thinks that this should be bumped up to a theatrical feature release. And he goes to Miyazaki and he says confidently, this will be a hit. And Miyazaki's like, yeah, go for it. So this is, once again, we've talked about a few of this series. Once again, it's a film by this younger generation of Ghibli animators making their feature debuts. We've talked about... Yoshifumi Kondo with Whisper of the Heart in the last series, and for Arrietty we had Hiromasa Yonobayashi. We've not yet got to Goro Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki's son, who around this time was also coming onto the scene at Ghibli. But when I say younger generation, I'd like to share their ages, these directors, when they're making their first feature. So Morita was 38 when this film was released. Hiromasa Yonobayashi was 37 when Arrietty came out. Goro Miyazaki, 39.
Yeah, they're not exactly Xavier Dolan.
No, they're not wunderkinds. They've been around for a long time. They've paid their dues. But when this film finally came out, Cat Returns, it was a pretty good box office hit, if not a smash. It was 7th highest grossing film of the year overall in Japan, behind... Let's do this. Number one was Harry Potter, Chamber of Secrets, Star Wars, Attack of the Clones, Monsters, Inc., Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, Spider-Man, and Ocean's 11. What a year at the box office.
That's so good.
And then The Cat Returns just nestles in there, just inside the top 10. Hiroyuki Morita made this film and went back to being an animator. He worked on the Ghibli co-production of Ghost in the Shell, Innocence, and worked on Tales from Earthsea, which we'll get to eventually, the Goro Miyazaki movie. And he's still just jobbing animator now. He hasn't really gone on and made many features since. So it's just this one and done sort of filmmaker. But what's interesting about Cat Returns is because it's the film that Ghibli released almost directly after Spirited Away. It comes out in the UK in 2005 on DVD. It plays at London Film Festival before that. It does the international rounds. It's almost the second film many people saw after Spirited Away. And interestingly, it comes out internationally before Whisper of the Heart gets full-blown international distribution. So many people think that this... have no idea that this is a sequel. Have no idea it has a connection to the film in the catalogue.
Yeah.
The returns aspect, what's that even mean?
I've got to know what that would be like to come to this film without knowing... about Whisper of the Heart.
It's funny you should say that, Jake. So, Ayana, this is your approach to The Cat Returns.
Yeah.
So tell us about your Ghibli memories and how you got to the Ghibli and how The Cat Returns focuses in on that.
Well, I guess I was introduced to Ghibli when I was around 10 or 11. My best friend, shout out to Natalie, if you're listening, but she's an artist and an animator, and she's been, like, obsessed with Ghibli her whole life, basically. And so she introduced me to Spirited Away first. And when I saw Spirited Away, my mind was just completely blown. Like, I'm a 98 baby, so, like, at that time I was watching High School Musical and stuff, and I'd never seen anything like Spirited Away before. So, yeah, we watched Spirited Away together, and then she said to me, you have to watch all the movies Ghibli has ever made. My favorite ones are Kiki's Delivery Service and The Cat Returns. So those were the three that kind of introduced me to the world of Ghibli.
Such a fascinating route in, isn't it? You know, we talk all the time about how there's this top tier of movies, Spirited Away, Mononoke.
You know, Totoro, Fireflies. But Cat Returns, it just would never have even come to me at all. I just feel like I never heard anyone even talk about it, let alone it be a part of your formative entry into this world. But obviously, that you can't help in those situations to love it. Like I love The Day After Tomorrow because it was one of the first DVDs that I bought, and it's because I didn't have that many. And you just rotate those films, and you grow to love it. And almost can't comprehend any critical reception to it.
I'll have no bad words spoken about Day After Tomorrow on this podcast. It's one of my dad's favourite movies.
Oh, it's a total dad film.
It has Manchester United in there, Ruud van Nistelrooy scoring against Boca Juniors. It's a classic moment of cinema for all concerned.
It really
but
is.
Is The Cat Returns a classic cinema moment for all concerned? Shall we talk about this review?
Let's do it.
Let's go to it.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So Jake, we always, in these reviews, start off with what's different. What's interesting, Ayana, is that maybe you didn't have a sense of what was Ghibli style at this point when you're watching that. But it'd be great. Let's talk about, I think what's so different about this film is that the animation style, the character designs are so unlike a Miyazaki movie or any of the Takahata films. Did that strike you, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, that is the first thing that I took note of. You've got thicker lines, harder edges, sharper angles. The people seem like they've been put on one of those medieval torture devices and stretched out compared to any of the other ones that I've seen before. It's a leaner film in that respect. You've got these backgrounds that are detailed, realistic, and but then the people dropped into them are a lot more cartoonish.
Yeah.
And I think, as you said in the context, this is almost like a fairy tale within a fantasy. And I think the style is really leaning into that, that it doesn't have that connection to reality that Whisper does.
Not at all. It's so different. And Marita, you say the backgrounds, he was very keen on going and taking photographs of actual Tokyo and basing it on documentary realism, which of course only goes so far because before we know it, we're off in a fantasy cat kingdom. But the connections with Whisper of the Heart I find so fascinating because Miyazaki comes in and says he wants these three aspects to be reflected in the film. And the antique shop is only there in the beginning shot, right?
Yeah. And I had issue with that beginning shot because it did that really annoying thing where it felt like in the edit they suddenly needed to remind everyone that this was coming on from Whisper of the Heart because the first shot of the film then appears like 15 minutes later as if you've forgotten about it already. And it just felt like they needed to jog people's memory a bit. And I feel like if you are hoping to get an audience who doesn't know anything about this, actually it would have been better to set up the world without any nods to Whisper or anything like that and actually start with Haru and establish her first and then kind of gradually step into the Cat Kingdom world rather than teasing up Baron at the start.
But is that our bias, maybe, that we are expecting that going into this film, having seen and loved Whisper of the Heart? Was that an issue for you seeing that, Ayana?
Well, see, because I saw The Cat Returns first, and I didn't see Whisper of the Heart until very recently, like last year, maybe. So the opening shot was just, it was very interesting to me because it's completely shrouded in mystery. I had no idea what I was getting into. And as well, it feels very dramatic. Like it has this epigraph at the beginning where it's this quote and you're like, what am I going into? But it takes a radically different turn when you actually get into the story. So I wasn't really, I had nothing to compare it to. So to me, it was just a completely original film.
And I suppose with that setup, a title like that, and then the actual name of the film, The Cat Returns, there's a lot going on to try and hook you and tease you in there. Because like if you, like yourself, if you don't know who the cat is, and now he's returning, who is he? And I need to learn about this cat to learn about why it's so important that he returns. But yeah, let's go into, as well as the antique shop itself doesn't actually have much screen time in here.
Well, exactly.
A lot of importance.
Yeah.
And it seems to, it's definitely taken on a almost Shrek-like fairy tale feel inside the shop compared to how it looked in Whisper as well. Mm-hmm. Again, that it felt like a working space, which it no longer is. And then Muta and Baron, I felt, were quite a big distortion of who they were presented in Whisper.
Yeah.
But it's quite confusing to try and view this film through two lenses. Like, there's the lens that we're coming at it from, of knowing Whisper of the Heart and coming off of 10 films before us, and then me having to jump into this one. But obviously, as with so many sequels in a kind of Marvel universe way that we're in now, they have that constant battle of, we need to set this up for new audiences and old audiences. And perhaps the changes to Muta and Baron helped new audiences, like Anna.
Yeah, I think what's refreshing about The Cat Returns is, you know, when it usually comes to sequels, you're required to do all your homework before it and understand the entire world around it so you can understand all these little references. But The Cat Returns, to me, just completely works on its own, and you don't really need to see Whisper of the Heart to enjoy it. So, yeah.
Not at all. As we're speaking, I'm wondering whether that opening shot of the antique shop is almost like the opening of a storybook. Because if it's a story within the imaginative space of the character from Whisper of the Heart, all we need is that evocation. Yeah. Does the antique shop exist in Harry's world? I mean, this is going way deep.
Well, I mean, yeah. But if she's writing stories, let's say all of her stories involve Baron the Cat, and they all start at the antique shop, and then that's page one of all the books, and this is just book one in the ongoing series that she's writing from within the world of Whisper of the Heart. But I can appreciate how the changes to Muta and Baron then, because Muta is quite elusive, silent, in Whisper as just this...
A real cat.
Yeah, teasing dogs, and just a bit of fun side character. And here is given a voice and a backstory and all of this. And Baron is given a lot more to do as well. And I had a hard time accepting those. And in the same way that, like, they felt like a bit of Boba Fett in the Star Wars prequels to me, because I loved what those characters were in Whisper of the Heart. And I can't unsee this film. Like, as soon as I've watched this, it's like when you see the film of something and then read the book, you can't not imagine those faces as the people in the book, no matter if you don't want to. That's why it's a tough time being a His Dark Materials fan. And I just didn't like having this new information, because I love Muta for being what they are.
A cat that gets the train, wanders around, terrorizes dogs, gets a free ride on a bike, all sorts, It is there is an element of that. You know, what's amazing about Whisper of the Heart is it is full of mystery and these little references that you could then... You know, it's just everyday life, but it's filled with so much magic. And here, it's almost like X-Men Origins Wolverine telling you how Wolverine got his leather jacket. Yeah. We don't care.
But something I really did like in it, and we actually had a similar conversation with Pom Poko in our key scenes. We got another parade. There's a fantastic cat parade in this film, which also introduces us to the Cat King, who's a fantastic character. This mangy, wild boy.
Looks nothing like any cat. So we spoke about the cat in Arrietty last week, which again was animated like no other Ghibli cats. But the Cat King, I think he's up there for me.
Yeah.
All-time top five. What do you think, Anna? Good cat?
He's a great cat. Yeah.
With his bulging eyes out in all directions.
I love the design of all the cats. They bring a lot of personality to every character. Like, my favorite in the parade is like actually the cat bodyguards, and yes, they make them into tuxedo cats, and then they just run up and chuck all the stray cats over fences. I thought they were just hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, this parade, I don't know, there's perhaps more of a tradition in Japan of parades and the importance that they have, because in Pompoko, it's like this completely magical, fantastical thing that just happens on a regular street, and it's, in that film, people are meant to be in awe and wonder of it and then kind of forget about it afterwards. And in here, again, it's just happening at night, regular street, all these cats appear. And again, not really much seems to happen afterwards other than to our main character.
Mm-hmm,
And I like the idea that all of these films are taking place in worlds where, yeah, we'll just chuck a parade on. Why not?
That's the way to get someone's attention.
Yeah.
One person's attention is to throw a parade. Yeah. But then we make it to the Cat Kingdom, which is where almost the genre of the movie comes through. I think this is, we talk all the time about the Western fairy tale literary tradition and its influence on Ghibli. This is such an Alice in Wonderland story. She walks down an alleyway, finds herself in this hinterland between the Cat Kingdom and the real world.
I really like how she gets there.
Yeah.
Because it's not through a magical portal. It is within the city. And it's got that great spirit of adventure that you would give to a kid, like in a children's book, that if you walk the streets of London for long enough, you'll be able to find the right alley and get into the Cat Kingdom.
Yeah, it's very much like Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, which is a reference I'll drop, but maybe we'll fall on deaf ears in this room. I'm sure someone out there will share my love of that book and TV series. But I'd love to know what you think about the tone of this film, Jake. It's something a little different. Marita's storytelling vibe is ever so slightly different from Miyazaki. Mm. It's still this adventure, going to a strange world populated with all sorts of crazy characters and a female character at the heart. But there are some things that are just slightly off model for me.
Yeah, well, like the main thing, in the grand scheme of things, not a big point to make really, but there's this idea of coolness in the film, which we've seen kind of deconstructed in stuff like Howl and Spirited Away. And this idea of pursuing coolness and pursuing a cool person. And rather than kind of deconstructing what that is or learning about your own independence and that importance, here it's just good to be cool.
And the Baron is cool.
Yeah, and she says he's not only a cat, he's cool.
I thought all cats were cool.
They're cool cats.
It's cool for cats.
Yeah.
But he's also just the most uncomplicated hero. He's almost a Mary Sue in that trope of a character who has every power and every attribute required for a situation. He's almost perfect. Mm. But he is cool. I mean, stepping back from the film, personally, I think he is the coolest of all Ghibli characters, the Baron.
Of all Ghibli characters, the Baron is the coolest.
He's a cool cat.
Yeah, if I want to dance with somebody, if I have to dance with somebody in a ballroom, I'd dance with him. If I need somebody to save me from a bunch of marauding cat villains, I'd turn to him. If I'm going to jump into the air and fly away magically, I'd like him to hold my hand. Ayana, was the Baron somebody that struck a chord with you?
I mean, yeah, I quite like the Baron, but I was thinking about, it kind of has this damsel in distress vibe that in The Cat Returns, but so I didn't appreciate that because usually in the film, the Baron just comes in and saves her and everything's great. But also Haru, it kind of reinvents the damsel in distress in a way because Haru saves herself in a way because there are these flashbacks where, you know, she saves the cat by feeding her, and that comes back to bite later when she's about to be forced to marry the prince, but this cat comes in, and the prince is like, no, I'm marrying her instead. And the only reason she's there is because of Haru's selflessness. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, we'll get to the ending in a second. Yeah. But Ayana, especially after watching Spirited Away and Kiki's Delivery Service, which have two very Miyazaki heroines at the centre, mm-hmm. who maybe are scared by the wide world around them but have to rise to meet with it. I find Haru a little bit slapsticky. She falls over a lot in this film. And what do you think of Haru?
There's a weird boy drama side plot to it, which, like, why was it there in the first place? And it's not addressed after. And then there's also this weird... She starts getting a crush on the Baron, and
sure Michael would be.
Yes.
But I think The Cat Returns is different in that it feels a bit more accessible to kids in a way. It's a bit Disney-fied because it has these sight gags and slapstick humor. But not to say that kids aren't smart enough to understand something like Spirited Away, but I think it works as a good entry point.
It is, yeah.
Like something like Spirited Away, you would maybe, as you did watch at the same age, but maybe with Spirited Away, you're more into it for these, as the film is made up of individual segments in a way, that you're just propelled by the motion of it, by that constant moving forward, rather than what's actually happening, who the characters are, just because the whole film is so engaging.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's... 75 minutes long, it's easy to follow, it's quite bright, it's cartoonish. As an entry point for younger viewers into Ghibli, I can see why that really works.
And that means it falls back on some storytelling functions that Miyazaki had left behind by this point. From Princess Mononoke onwards, he creates these, Porco Rosso onwards even, he creates these complex worlds where fighting doesn't solve things, whereas this is definitely a swashbuckling adventure where there's a climactic duel between the Baron and the King, and it's all, you know, fighting soldiers and so on. That's the solution. It's not some sort of internal solution. There is that, of course, what you mentioned, Ayana, about the lucky happenstance that the prince's actual betrothed is a cat that she fed years ago when she was a stray. This is another Ghibli ending, isn't it?
This is like taken all of the others and made them look like just normal endings. we've had the conversation about, oh, this film really doesn't stick the landing a few times now. This is like not sticking the landing, falling over, and like collapsing into the crowd. It's a horrible ending. Because we've spoken Porco Rosso about how at that point they suddenly became these like jazz animators that will find the story as we go along. And somehow that works, and that Spirited Away and like came out of that way of doing things. This feels like the time where that really didn't work. Because the story goes along in a way that, like when a child tells a joke and they've forgotten to put bits in.
Oh, that's like, cruel.
But when a child tells a story like that and he says, oh, but you need to know that actually earlier in the day, someone said this to me. Right, and then we're back to now. And then the cat did this. But you've got to remember that actually he's a prince. and then it crams all of this into about 2 minutes at the end. And I was completely lost, and it just felt like putting a plaster over so many loose ends that actually I didn't care about anyway.
Do you not care about Muta being the great terrifying terrorist who ate all of the food?
There's someone called Ronaldo Moon, and the best thing about that is Ronaldo Moon's name.
Yeah. Did the ending work for you, Ayana? Did that feel different to the other films to you? Or as you've grown older, do you think of it differently or anything?
I mean, I look back on The Cat Returns fondly, but I think just my experience of this was how I got into Ghibli has shaped the way I see The Cat Returns. So I completely understand, but also my heart still hurts attacking my beloved film.
But let's end on a positive note. Is there anything that we've forgotten to mention that you would, you know, set point to and say, this is what's great about The Cat Returns?
I really love the score to the film. The film opens with this very dramatic overture, and it really adds to the whole mystery of the film. I guess if you watch Whisper of the Heart first, it's not really mysterious, but to me, that really brought me into the film. And every track in the score is so radically different from the last, and it was just really interesting and eclectic. I can't even say that word, but and there's this great track when they have that ball or dinner party scene, and it sounds like the theme song to The Apprentice by Prokofiev, but it's just so good. It's a great score. I love it.
A good score.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I mean, certainly better than Arrietty's.
Oh, so we have had comments on the Arrietty score. Anyway, let's go put this on the leaderboard.
Let's do it. And now it comes to that time where we've got to figure out where this film goes on Michael Leder's leaderboard. Now, is The Cat Returns going to take the number one spot? I'll be shocked if it does, but I'm fascinated to find out where it's going to sit, Michael.
You know, Jake, there's almost something, there's appropriate symmetry today.
Yes.
Because Whisper of the Heart is top, and unfortunately The Cat Returns is bottom of the leaderboard. Only because I think that the wisdom and the idiosyncrasies and the stylish flair that I come to Ghibli for is missing from this film. It's fine. It's a good slight fantasy adventure. As you say, short and sweet. A great entry point, very simple. But it's just not what I come to these films for. So it's at the bottom of the table currently.
I think that's fair, I've got to say.
Yeah. I apologise so much that we've been kicking
breaking
your memories to death today.
It's fine.
would this be up there for you? Do you have any other favourites in the Ghibli canon?
Do you know what? The Cat Returns isn't actually one of my favourites. Like, I do look back on it fondly, but in comparison to the rest of Ghibli's filmography, it's not the best. But I think my favourite is a quite out there pick. I really love Miyazaki's supposed swan song, The Wind Rises. Mm-hmm. It's just a really interesting film in that it takes a biopic and completely turns it on its head and makes it into this fantasy film. And yeah, I loved it so much. Yeah,
I think it's an incredible film. Mm-hmm. And it's twice as long as The Cat Returns, Jake. So not one for the short.
Yeah, but I've heard it's about planes.
Exactly.
And I've heard there's a lot of blue and green in it.
There's a lot
of my boxes already being ticked.
And after Porco Rosso, knowing how much you enjoyed that, I think you will take a lot from this film.
Excellent.
When we get to it.
Please do.
Excellent. Ayanna, thank you so much for joining us today. How can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Suspiriana. The pun doesn't fit the pronunciation of my name, but there you go.
It's a great pun. Yeah. We'll never let pronunciation get in the way of a good pun.
No, never. And both to you and the listeners, we hope you've enjoyed your time in the Ghibliothek. What are we talking about next week, Mike?
Oh, next week we're back with Hayao Miyazaki for Ponyo, a great kid movie / epic / disaster movie.
So much going on.
Yeah.
And a tight 90 as well, I think. Yeah. Right. Finally, we've got to say a big thanks to Silk Factory for their help making this podcast. We're recording here in their studio in lovely Soho.
Yes, and they don't just make podcasts. They're a full-blown film marketing creative agency. They also make trailers and content for TV, digital and social platforms.
Yeah, if you want to find a bit more about them, you can check out their website at thesilkfactory.co.
And that wraps up this week's episode of Ghibliothek. Until the next time, you can follow Jake on Twitter at Jake H. Cunningham.
And you can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael J. Leder.
Ghibliothek is a Little Dot Studios production. We record at Silk Factory. Our music is made by Anthony Ng. Our artwork is by Sophie Mo, and Steph Watts helps us out with all of our GIFs, images, and anything else we post online. The show is produced by Michael Leder, Jake Cunningham, Steph Watts, and Harold McShiel. That's me. I do the voiceover for the credits as well.
Hey, Hi, everyone. Thank you for sticking with us through the credits. We often talk about directors on Bibliotech, but I feel this is a nice opportunity to highlight the screenwriter behind The Cat Returns. That's Reiko Yoshida. This was her only credit for Ghibli, but she's since gone on to work on many notable anime series and films. I'll highlight two of them in particular, two of the best anime features of the last couple of years. She worked on Masaki Yuasa's Lou Over the Wall and Naoko Yamada's A Silent Voice, A Silent Voice being, I think, the first animated film from Japan released internationally directed by a woman. It's brilliant. Go and check it out.